So if you are going through a transition, I have the coach for you because she is amazing at what she does. Now, she is an ICF certified coach and over 20 years of experience guiding individuals and organizations through these tough transitions. And y'all know we're going through some transitions, right? There's some going back to office type stuff happening right now. And a lot of people are going back and they are hurting over the transition of leaving their home to have to go back into the office. There's also a lot of like divorces, unfortunately. There's a lot of women leaving, you know, the corporate world to start their own stuff. Like there's a lot of transitions going on in our lives. And I think I found the coach for you. So I'm going to go ahead and be quiet because I really want you to listen to this. Because if you are going through a transition, I don't want you getting stuck. I want you to have somebody by your side that will help you with the transition so that you can move forward and win. All right. See you there. What up, party people? This is Nina Perez, and this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added, and I'm so glad you're here. This is such an amazing time, right? I mean, it's a new year. It's a new thing. I just love it so much, and I'm excited because today she is so cool. Like, I just got to talk to her, laugh. We just had such a good time. Her name is Bitsy Hamilton. She's an ICF-certified coach with over 20 years of experience guiding individuals and organizations through life's toughest transitions, because we don't got that, right, y'all? So Elizabeth is the creator of Own It Framework, a powerful tool for taking ownership of your life and leadership. And with her expertise in life, divorce, academic coaching, she blends empathy, intuition, and action to help her clients thrive, right? So based here in Austin, Texas, me too, insights on transformation, purpose, and all of that. And I just really love people who are out here doing their thing and showing you who they are and giving you all of this knowledge, wisdom. And ICF is a great, great institution, by the way, Bitsy. So I'm glad you're here. How are you? I didn't know you were in Austin until I read that. I was like, what?
Yes. Yeah. Based in Austin, grew up here. Been back since 2011.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. I actually just moved here last year ago. And,
okay. Well, welcome.
Thank you, from Connecticut, and absolutely love it, and had a grandchild here, and my kids are here. I'm like, I just love it here so much. I love
it. That's awesome.
Yeah. So welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here. Now, I have a lot of great people that listen to the show, and they're super active, and I have a lot of like CEOs and solopreneurs and entrepreneurs, coaches. Those are the kind of people that listen to the show. And so I want them to know you, though, a little bit more than I just said. So who are you? Who are you, Bitsy? Tell us.
So who am I? Where do I come from? I am a near native Austinite, grew up here, but I'm a Southern girl. You know, born and raised Atlanta, went to school in Mississippi.
Okay.
So a very particular, I suppose, outlook in the world when you come from the South. And we talk about New South, not Old South, but I became a coach after time as an educator, because I really wanted an opportunity to expand who I was reaching. That going beyond just the classroom was very important to me. And I initially started working with adolescents and young adults, expanded into divorce coaching, which is a whole fascinating world.
Yeah.
And really found my calling in working with transition.
Okay.
So be that transition in a marriage, be that transition in a career, transition in life. That tends to be where people get stuck. And when I developed Own It, it was really around, okay, what are the things as we experience a transition that we need to own, that we need to be examining and exploring so that we can make the best of those transitions and really grow ourselves in those processes.
Yeah. I mean, those things are, and the truth is everyone has them, right? Like some transition might be a different category, like you said, right? Whether it's school, career, divorce, but it's still transition. You know, it's kind of like I was talking to someone recently about that I feel like one of my friendships that I've had for a very, very long time is coming to like a close or an end, and it's hurting me, right? And the person said, you know, are you grieving it? And I'm like, I didn't think about that. And she said, yeah, it's a loss, whether it's a, you know, a loss that somebody passed away or a loss of a friendship or a loss of a job. Or, and I'm like, that's so true, right? So those transitions are so important because we do get stuck because you don't, you don't, you sometimes we just downplay it like, oh, it's okay. Well, I'm fine, but you're not, right? So I'm just wondering, what's the first step that you recommend for someone who may be overwhelmed by some major life or professional transitions? What's like the first step you recommend for those type of people?
First step is really to take a step back and ground for a minute.
Mm.
Because when you're in that overwhelm, nothing that you do is going to make much sense.
Right, right, right.
It is going to come from a place of reaction as opposed to intention.
Yeah. How do you do that though? How do you do that?
Right. Well, as a coach, you sit down with somebody and you say, okay, whoa, let's take a step back. Let's take some deep breaths. Where are you? Let's find yourself in your body. Let's take some time outdoors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Time in nature is probably the number one way to ground.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily have to be, well, I don't know how to do breathing exercises. No, but you know how to take a walk outside.
Yeah.
You know how to do that. Every one of us knows how to do that. And for those of us who need to be active in order to ground, myself being one of those, that is I find to be the quickest, easiest way. Take 20 minutes, walk outside. Feel the sun, listen to the trees, take a minute. Take that time for yourself. And now let's come back and let's talk about this transition. What is it? What's happening? And where are you in it? Mm-hmm. So often we feel like transitions happen to us.
Right.
That we are not an active participant in that transition. And when we abdicate that responsibility for ourselves, that's when the overwhelm really strikes because we feel like we don't have any control. We have no ownership. So it's so okay, good. Where are you in this transition?
Yeah. That's so good. And I like that you told them to step back for a second. I think when you're in it though, Betsy, it's hard. Like you don't see how to step back, right? Because it's like, if I step back, I'm going to lose a day of work or I'm going to lose money or I'm going to, you know, like this anxiety that happens, right? And so I love that, you know, that you could just say, do you know, step back for a second, go outside, you know, maybe put your feet on the ground too. Cause I like grounding too. There's something powerful about that. Like I didn't realize it, but once I did, I was like, whoa, it feels good. It feels really good.
Like, oh, hug a tree. That feels like again.
Yes.
Sunshine feels like.
That's so true. So, you know, because I have a lot of people who listen to the show that are in these major roles, I'm just wondering, have they ever paused to think of that, right? To think of pausing or to step back? And most times the answer is no.
They don't.
Right? Yeah. So how do you like show that empathy and show them that it's okay to step, you're not going to lose anything by stepping back, right? I think that's the key. Like, how do we get them to get there?
Well, and part of it is, especially for the clients that I work with, it's why am I here if you're not going to listen to me? Like, oh, I'm paying you. I'm engaged with you. I chose this. Okay, then I need you to engage with me and listen to me. So when I say, let's take a few minutes, put our feet in the grass, that's what we're going to do.
Right.
And that 5 minutes, and that may be all they can stand, frankly.
Yeah.
For people who are high action, go, 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 go. 5 minutes may be all you get. 2 minutes may be all you get.
Yeah.
But just that, even if you can get that, even if that's what the threshold for them is, taking that 2 minutes is so powerful. And I think one of the things I use frequently with my high powered clients is to say, the 2 minutes you're going to give me right now is less than the time it's going to take for you to undo the mistake you're about to make.
Mm.
And they go, oh, right. Because if I screw this up because I'm hot and I'm angry and I'm upset and I'm overwhelmed and I make the wrong decision and I hire the wrong employee or I make the wrong deal, then guess what? That's going to have really big consequences.
It sure is. It sure is. Yeah.
You just went off on your ex-wife about your kids.
Yeah.
If you had taken 2 minutes and come into that calmer, that helps preserve a peaceful relationship there. That makes things easier on you. It makes things easier on your kids. That's, to me, it's worth those 2 minutes.
Do they listen?
Usually.
Yeah. Good. You know, because I'm listening to you, and it's true, isn't it? I mean, like, it looks like you're guiding them almost in, well, first of all, I want to talk about your framework, right? Mm-hmm. I want to talk about your framework, because even though they are, you know, maybe in that divorce or in that marriage or in that business or in that deal or in that whatever, it's still the same person. So you're mm-hmm. teaching them these skills that transition to every facet of their life, right? Because you're dealing with different topics, right? Whether it's the divorce, whether it's the transition at work, all that kind of stuff. So I want to talk about your framework, because you deal with these, you know, high achievers and people who are going through this. I'm just wondering, what does that framework look like? How does that break down for them?
So it really breaks down into 9 elements.
Okay.
And we can walk through, you know, what I usually do with them is walk through those 9. For every transition. Okay, what are you choosing? How are you acting? What mistakes mm-hmm. have you made that have led you here? What mistakes mm-hmm. are you making in the
transition? So ownership, there's ownership here.
Total ownership.
Yeah.
That is the whole goal, is mm-hmm. really, truly radical accountability, mm-hmm. radical ownership of what is happening to you. So often we feel out of control in transition.
Right, yeah.
Right, you lost your job. That wasn't your choice. All right. Now what? I own this transition that I didn't choose?
Yeah.
You know, my kids are grown up. They've left the house. Well, I knew that was going to happen, but I didn't really choose it. I didn't want to be an empty nester. I wanted to keep my kids around. I like my kids. Well, how do I just lament that endlessly? And make everyone around me miserable and myself miserable? What can I do? You know, what do I resent? What are my dreams for myself again? So often we're just completely disconnected from those things.
So true. And sometimes you think you can do this alone. I don't think you can do this alone, Bitsy. I feel like you do need a coach, right? And that's why I wanted you on here, because I know that a lot of people who are listen to the show are, you know, people who are either working with coaches or looking for coaches and things like that. And I know that you can't do this journey alone. You're not, the truth is your brain will not allow you to get uncomfortable for that long. Right. So as soon as you ask your brain, why am I doing this? You're immediately thinking about laundry or how you got to go do something. Your brain is like, nope, we're not doing that today. Okay.
No, our brains will run from it every chance they get.
Every chance, exactly.
And that's where a coach comes in, right? Because we will push you out of that comfort.
Yep.
And hold you in that discomfort.
Right.
But also make that discomfort a safe place. It's like, you're not in your discomfort by yourself.
Right.
I'm sitting right here with you. Yeah. And when you start to feel, because when you're coaching someone, you are watching their bodies. You are listening to their breathing. You are paying attention to what is happening for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know what you're doing, you know when to pull them out. Yep. Right? Before they hit overwhelm, before they hit panic, but while they're still uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you're holding that space. It's okay to stay uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's not okay to feel unsafe.
Right. And you're holding that space for them to do that with vulnerability, right? And truthfulness and no judgment. And I think that, you know, people who don't think coaches are, oh, I don't need a coach or whatever, and you're still trying to go at this alone. I always tell people, listen, everybody needs somebody, right? And every coach needs a coach. Every therapist needs a therapist. Like, every doctor needs a doctor. Everybody needs somebody. And a lot of times, especially as entrepreneurs and solopreneurs, we think we have to do this all alone. And so we're at this alone all the time. And then we're wondering why we're overwhelmed, stuck, stressed, like all these things, all the things, right, Elizabeth? All the things. So, all the things. So what leadership lessons have you found to be the most, like, but the most impactful, the most effective when you're guiding all of these high stake clients? What kind of leadership lessons should they glean or have?
I will say one of the biggest things that I can teach someone is how to listen.
Oh, that's good.
To themselves and to the people around them. So many of us we assume.
Yeah.
We assume.
Oh, yeah.
And we act with best intentions, but we so often are just not listening.
Mm-hmm.
And that piece of, you know what, take a step back and listen. What is that former partner telling you? What is what is your business partner telling you? What is your employer telling you? What are your employees saying? What's happening here? You know, what are your children saying to you? What's your family, your friends, whomever? You know, where are you? Are you listening to them, or are you ignoring them?
Yeah. And, you know, I always say too, that in the midst of that, always remember that that person who's talking to you is it could be about 10% or more correct. And I say that because sometimes when we are listening with defense on, right? So we're listening, but we're thinking about that reaction because you're wrong. You are never going, you're not really listening, right, Elizabeth? Yeah. So that's like a skill. I remember I took a whole course on positive intelligent listening. Right. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, you know, being a leader and a director, I had a team of like 20 people under me. And I just remember I used to always pause to really hear what they were trying to really understand and take in what they were saying. That's not an easy skill, though. No,
listening without an agenda is not an easy skill.
No, it is not. It is not. And your
There's a reason that like our children will hear, you can tell your child the same thing 1,000 times.
Yep.
Someone else will tell your child that and they'll be like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. And you go, wait, what? And it's like, because your child could not hear you.
Yes. Yes.
Because they are here. They are listening with an agenda.
Right. Right. And same as us.
Is, my parent is wrong.
Yeah. Exactly. But it's the same thing, right? Like when you were talking about like the divorce and all of that, I remember not hearing my ex-husband. No, you're wrong. It's not going to happen. You know, like, and it was a constant battle. It was a constant battle.
Sure.
Right.
Well, cause you didn't get to the point of divorce because everything was happy and everybody got along.
Right.
You know, you didn't get there because of that.
Right, so exactly.
How do you start to let those things fall off and say, this is a new phase? And we have a new agenda here. We have a new relationship.
Yeah.
How do you let go of the old to let the new be what control, what now is our operating, you know, memorandum here.
So how do you,
what men are easier to redirect on that than women, by the way.
Oh, how come that doesn't shock me? how do you redirect them? What are some strategies that you use to redirect them?
So often I'll do one of the exercises I really love doing with clients is, who are you now? Okay. Design the person that gets through this transition the way you want to get through this transition. How do you see that person? And really it creates for them an ability to separate themselves and the emotion. Like, okay, let me really think about who is the person that gets through this transition and comes out the other side successful. What tools do they need? What skills? How do they need to behave? What are the actions?
Yeah.
Okay. Now can we move you towards that? How would it feel to become that person? It's like, oh, I'd feel pretty good. I'd feel a lot better about this if that's who I was. It's like, well, you probably already are that person.
Yeah. Yeah. You're leveling them up on the spot.
Exactly. It's on the spot leveling up.
That's so good.
And that's then so holding good. Them accountable to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, it's really, It's really how you see yourself. It really, really is. And it's so interesting. You know, I recently started taking a whole course on hypnosis, right? Mm-hmm. On like breaking limiting beliefs, hypnosis, and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. It was very interesting because I'm in the process of listening to this money affirmation hypnosis thing for it, right? Mm-hmm. And the first few days, Elizabeth, it was great. I heard it every night. So, and then by the fourth or fifth day, I could no longer hear it. It was jumbled. And it's because I hit a wall. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? I was like, what? I said, that's not going to happen to me. And as soon as I started, like, 4 days in, I'm like, oh my God, it happened. I can't hear what he's saying. Like, it doesn't sound English. And and I said to my husband, I said, can you hear this? He's like, yeah, it says this, this, this. And I'm like, what? Like, I couldn't hear it. And I think that has a lot to do with it, right, Elizabeth? Like, what you're teaching them is to pause, to listen, to be, and to understand that, you know, maybe what's coming at them, they might not want to accept at that moment, but just give yourself a moment to understand that there is something coming at you, right? Yeah, that's so interesting. And our brain will shut it down. Like you said, the kids will be like, my parents don't know what they're talking about, but a neighbor says it and they're geniuses.
And the kids are like, you know, oh yeah, like Sam next door is a genius. And you're like, I've been saying that for 6 months. Wait, hold on.
Yeah. That's so interesting. So when you are taking them through this process to work with you, right? Because you work with, and I want to make sure I'm clear. Do you work with individuals and organizations or? Oh, you do. Okay. So talk to me about what it looks like with an organization. How do you do this and practice this with an organization?
So with an organization, it can be, it's a whole different ballgame.
Really. Yeah.
But so often it is empowering the voices that are rarely heard. It's often running focus groups and getting those focus groups into a place where they are able to communicate up to management and also getting management in a place where they are open to listening.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good.
Some of your best insights are going to come from the people that are doing the work, the day to day, who is engaged in this process.
Right.
Because they're the ones that are going, hey, this thing over here, it doesn't work. We need to fix this. Hey, here's a better tool. And management's going, what do you mean? It's fine. Because what management sees isn't what's happening in the here and now. They're actually seeing a delayed effect.
Right. That's true.
They may say, you know, sales look fine. Everything looks good. Productivity's great. Everything looks great right here, right now. But where that thing that's not working is going to show up is 6 months from now. Whereas somebody can tell you, hey, 6 months ago, I told you this didn't work. We could have fixed it in a month and saved ourselves 5 months of declining productivity.
Yeah. That's really true, because what happens is then you start to realize like you're having a decline in productivity 6 months later, or you're having a revolving door. People are leaving and you're like, what the heck is going on? That is so true. And so, you know, I think one of the hardest things, at least in corporate, when I was in corporate, what I found was that the people that had no voice were afraid to have one, even if you were there. Right. Yep. So because they were like, well, you know, my CEO is going to get upset, or my CEO is going to get, you know, they're not going to like this or whatever. So how do you work around that with organizations?
And that really comes to, in many cases, humanizing management.
Oh, that's good.
Teaching them how to be human beings with their employees. How do they connect? Because if you just see your manager as this person's going to be angry at me, well, that's not a relationship that's going to ultimately build your company.
Right, right.
You know, as management, you have to care about the people that work for you and with you.
Yeah.
And you have to show them that. Who are you? Are you a husband? Are you a wife? Are you a sports fan? Are you a parent? Are you, you know, are you a son, a daughter? Who are you? What matters to you? What humanizes you?
That's good. You know, I remember us, you know, as employees before I was a director, I remember people would like talk about a meeting after the meeting, right? So after all, they want to do this, but this doesn't work. You know, like that, exactly what you're talking about. Like, you know, no, the person doesn't have a voice, but they have a voice amongst their peers, right? Amongst the people that are in the trenches with them. And then when I became a director and, you know, so on and so forth, I realized, wow, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes for the directors and the C-suite and all of that, that the employees don't know.
Never see.
Yeah. And then you're like, I got it now. I get it. You know? So that was when I was first getting into management. And so I realized that my team, to this day, still call me, even though I haven't been there in a long time, but they still call me to this day to say, happy, you know, Merry Christmas, happy birthdays, all that, which is so sweet. Right. But it was because I was, I really very much was a servant leader, and I tried my best to be there for them, listen to them. They knew about my kids, my husband, my pet fish. Like, they knew everything. Right. And it did humanize me. You're right. I think that works. I think that really works. So what do you do with these contentious relationships, right? Like the divorces, like these, or the management and an employee, right? Like,
right.
Those are challenging. And, and sometimes
we'll
see that they are wrong or have a part in it, right? So is there a practice or an exercise that you do with them?
Well, and that's, again, where I go back to the own it framework, because usually it's like, okay, what are you afraid of? What's your fear here? What are you resenting? What are you, you know, what's been taken from you?
Yeah.
What comfort is now gone from you?
Mm-hmm.
What dreams are gone? What are the things that you were holding on to that you've lost? And what do you need to grieve in that? That's often with divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with employees and management, it's usually resentment and fear. Those are usually our pieces.
Yeah.
Where has choice been taken away from you? That's another one. You know, are you, and we're seeing that a lot, choice, especially right now with the back to office movement.
Yeah.
A lot of employees are like, I don't want to go back to the office. I don't want to commute.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, why would I want to do that? You know, when I can pop off between meetings and go do a load of laundry and make my life a whole lot easier, why do I want to go back to the office?
Yeah. It's becoming a thing. They need you, Elizabeth, because it's becoming a thing. Okay.
It's like, how do we navigate this in a way that works for everybody?
Yeah.
You know, do you have the CEO who's like, I want to be back in the office because I'm lonely and I don't want to be at home with my wife.
Right.
You know, I don't want to be at home with my husband and my kids or whatever. So I'm going to make everybody come back to the office. Well, that's not serving your employees. That's serving you.
Yeah.
But
that's what's happening, though.
Can we find other ways for you to not be lonely?
Yeah.
Can we find other, you know, what's at the heart of you wanting everyone back in the office?
Yeah. And sometimes it's power. Sometimes it's loneliness, but sometimes it's that authority thing, you know?
Sometimes it is.
Yeah. Like, I was speaking to another woman who, they want her to go back to the office. They don't really need her there because all of her work is remote, but they want her back. And he's like, I just want everybody back in the office. And I want to make sure that everybody's working. And it's like, yeah, but we've been more productive these last 2 years than we were before. Like, so what do you mean? But he has to see it. And so, you know, that's the thing. I think you're right. I think there's so many different things. And if they did come to the table with that framework, right, of listening and seeing that something's not being taken away from you, and how can we be empathetic and maybe curious about one another, right? Like, that's important. And a lot of work. Curiosity is very huge because it really opens up the mind, right? And so I wanted to actually ask you that, like, how can curiosity lead to this better problem solving for them? Because you bring up a very, very poignant point. This is happening right now, this back to the office movement, and people are not happy, girl. They are not happy at all. So I'm just wondering, how can curiosity lead to like a better problem solving for them during these challenging times so that they can start cultivating that?
Well, and it's where, you know, so many say, oh, well, I'll find this out in the exit interview. Why are you leaving?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You need to know now.
Yeah.
You don't need to wait until that employee is leaving, because then it's too late. They're gone.
And sometimes they don't want to tell you anyway. And they leave and they're like, yeah, it's all good. It's fine. Because they're like, I'm not going to burn any bridges.
Really,
yeah, exactly.
Because you don't care. And nothing I say is going to improve your process.
Exactly. Yep.
But if I reach out and say, this is what we as management are considering, tell us what you think. That can be anonymous. I will give you an anonymous way to give us feedback. Tell us why do you want to come back? Why do you not want to come back to the office? Here are 8 different ways we can do this. What do you think of them?
Mm-hmm.
Make that public. Make mm-hmm. that transparent. Again, it can be anonymous, but it can also be transparent.
I like that.
Here's what people are saying. Here's what your peers are saying. We're not just making this decision in a vacuum. Here are the factors that are going into us wanting you to come back to the office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have this very expensive lease. We need you in it. Okay. But what are those things? Because when it just seems like a power play, when it just seems like control, then everybody bucks that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are seeing a really significant decline in women moving into leadership. Women are leaving the workforce, leaving the management roles. They are not moving up.
I didn't know that.
So the question is, where are they going?
Where are they going?
Where are they going? Because they're not sitting at home, you know, churning butter. That's not what's happening to these corporate women.
That's so true. I mean, I deal with a lot of corporate women that want to start coaching businesses. That's who I work with. So right. I think that's what's happening. They're starting their own thing.
Exactly. Yeah. They're starting their own thing because they need the flexibility. If they want families, if they want leisure time to themselves, if they want, you know, and they look at corporate and they say, it's not worth it. I'm going to go start my own thing. I'm going to go be on my own boss and I'll be much happier.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. That's what's happening.
As we look at the world and say, why aren't there more women in these roles? Well, they went somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And most of them went to run their own companies.
That's so true. I didn't even look at it like that because I'm so inundated with that world that I just feel like that's just all I see. But that is so interesting, Elizabeth. I had no idea that that women were leaving the workforce in that way, like in droves in that way.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, it's a very masculine, you know, energy type of thing anyway, corporate, right? So I could see women wanting to have a more feminine energy type of business. I think we're tired of that, you know, like constantly, you know, competing and going for it and got to go and do it. And you get exhausted and you come home and you got the kids and you got, you know, your spouse and you got the house and you got the things. And it is exhausting. I'll be honest. I'm glad I left corporate. Yeah. So yeah, exactly.
You know, hey, what's a hobby?
Right.
Do you have any of those?
Right.
That's a question I ask a lot of my clients. What are your hobbies? What do you do for fun? And if it's Grey's Anatomy reruns, but what are you doing for you? What is that growing you?
That's so good.
You know, and even things like, even simple things. Do you paint? Do you crochet? Do you hike? Do you, you know, what are your hobbies? What are the things that you do for yourself?
Yeah, that's so good.
You don't have to sell it. You don't have to, what are you doing for you? It doesn't have to be monetized. Like so often we're told, oh, you have this hobby. Like you're, you know, whatever, you make scarves, you know, you should sell those. Well,
Then it becomes a business.
Then it becomes a business. Well, now it's not my hobby. It's my business.
Right. Right.
I'm a baker all the time.
Me too. Yeah.
You know, will you bake? Will you? I'm like, will I bake for my friends and my loved ones? Absolutely. Will I bake for money? No.
Yeah. Yeah. I literally just baked because people asked me to bake for them. No problem. So I baked a few dulce de leche cheesecakes and buttermilk chest pies and all this other stuff I've been baking for like the last few days. I'm like, okay, I don't want this to be a job. This has to still be my hobby, y'all. You know? But I didn't have a hobby for a long time, Betsy. I really didn't. I thought I did, but you're right. What was I doing? Binging The Office, you know, binging something else on Netflix. And when I even asked myself that question, maybe about 6 months ago, I'm like, what are your hobbies? I literally froze. Holy crap. What are my hobbies?
What are my hobbies?
That is so good. Oh man. That's something we really got to stop, pause, and think about for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Wow.
Well, we get so caught in the busy. We get so caught in the do all the time.
Yeah.
And it's, is that really important?
Yeah.
What are you doing for yourself? And that's another piece of our culture, is that in some ways, as much as we are in many ways very self-oriented, we are not oriented to care for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, it's selfish. You're not supposed to care for yourself. So, and then it's funny because there's another whole side of the culture where it's all about themselves.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like this dichotomy that happens. And I think another thing is too, like all of y'all who are listening to me and Bitsy also talk, is just remember that what's right for you is right for you. You don't have to worry about what the world tells you, what social media tells you, that one picture on Instagram that looks amazing. Like, I think that's where that's coming from too, Bitsy, that pressure to see what everybody else, because we stopped living our lives, Bitsy, and we started living our lives looking at other people live theirs.
Right.
You know?
Well, and how does my vacation compare to yours?
Yeah.
How does my hobby compare to yours?
Right.
You know, what are you into? You're into model trains? Awesome. I want to hear, as your coach, I want to hear about that. As your friend, I want to hear about that.
Right. Right.
Why? Because I want to know what you're passionate about.
Right. And they probably forgot what they're passionate about, quite frankly.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I love that. So I love that you work with individuals and you work with organizations. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. And especially for those of you who are listening, who are in the C-suite and above and all that, also think about that, because people who work for you, they're working for you, but you're also working with them. Like, they choose you, but you choose them. So you know what? Respect their time too. Like, they're people too. They're humans too. They have lives too. And let me tell you, you'll have people stay with you for a very long time if you invest in who they are and curious about what they do. I really believe that.
Just care.
Just care. That's it. Oh my God. I love that. So Elizabeth, go ahead.
Worst boss I ever had asked me to be on call the day of my stepdad's funeral.
Oh my gosh.
Is that investing in your people?
No,
it's not.
Yeah.
Send a plan.
That's awful. That's awful.
That's the Southern girl in me. Send a plan.
Yeah. It's hard for people if they don't have empathy. Yeah, exactly. If they don't have empathy or sympathy, it's very difficult. I worked with a boss like that a long time ago. Oh my God. Cruel, cruel, cruel man. You know, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't do it. And it's just like, you know, you really have to be a pretty miserable person to treat people like that, or just don't have any kind of empathy or sympathy for anyone. Like, it's very noticeable. It's very noticeable, right? So for those who are listening, Bitsy, I do want, okay, so I have one more question. When somebody calls you and wants to work with you, like, what does that look like? I'm sure it's not like a one-off, because this is coaching. So what does that look like? What does your program look like for those who are listening?
So it can look a lot of different ways, and I really try to structure it for the client. Mm-hmm. Typically, I work with clients minimum 10 sessions, and that's once a week. Occasionally, I will have a client that I work with twice a week. That it does happen. But usually once a week is about right. And like, when I'm working with like a high powered C-suite client, they have, I would say, access, not quite 24/7, but pretty close. Pretty close. I'm available by text most of the time, unless I'm asleep or with another client.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or doing something like this.
Right.
But I get back to them very quickly. It's like, you can always ping me for feedback, but giving that level of access also, you know, it comes with a price tag, but at
it
the
should.
Same time,
I mean, it should.
And it should. But usually it's a minimum 10 session or 3 months.
Okay,
and that
great.
Works out pretty well with an option to renew. I like to do that initial 3 months just to see how well how are you taking my feedback?
Yeah.
How is the program working for you? How fast do you work the program?
Right, right, right.
Because some clients need a lot more handholding than others.
Yeah.
100%. Some, like, they get it, they make the move, and they're like, okay, got it, made it through the transition.
Yeah.
Usually the ones who think they've got it after like three sessions, you're like, yeah, no, you don't.
Yeah. Of course. Because we
crash and burn in about a week and a half. And yeah. I know that because you're being cocky.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the high achieving mentality, right? Yeah. I'm the same way. Like, oh yeah. Click, check, 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 check. And then like 4 weeks later, I'm like, oh, what am I doing? Yeah, it's the same thing.
Well, right? And it's layers.
Yeah, it is. Layers. It's completely layers. And I don't know why we get through.
Here's the first layer.
Yeah.
And they go, okay. It's like, okay, now here's the next layer. And you've now spent a couple weeks in this. What are you now recognizing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's this thing I'm resenting that I didn't see before. Here's this choice I made, you know, 10 years ago. And now I'm seeing it in action. It's like, okay. So do we need to make a change in that choice? Do we need to, you know, is there something we need to modify in your life to now accommodate that choice?
Yeah.
Or rectify that choice? What do we need to do here?
Yeah.
So, you know, the further they get into it and the more they start to bring that awareness and that ownership to things, the more layers we start to peel back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people need to
recognize. Oh, I'm going to be fixed in a session. It's like, first of all, we're not fixing anything.
Right. That's right. Thank you.
This isn't a fix.
Yes. Yes. Exactly right. And the funny thing is that we with other things in our life, we know things is a process. We know things take time. Yet when it comes to like investing in ourselves or coaching or whatever, we think it's going to be like, oh, no, it's tomorrow, right? Like, no.
This is hard work.
Right. You didn't get here in one day. You don't expect to be done in one day. It's really kind of funny. But you know what? I'm glad that you said that because I think it brings awareness to those who are listening who are like, you know, maybe I want to go down this journey. Understand this is a life journey. Not that you'll be with Elizabeth for life, but you will have these tools that you will use for life. And that's the whole point. And you don't have to do this alone. Like I've had people re-up with me a couple of times because they're like, oh, I still need more. No problem. You know, let's do it. Right? Let's do it. Exactly. So how do people
come back? It's like, okay, you coached me through this. Now I'm going through this transition. Can we work through this new transition? It's like, great. Come on. Let's do it.
I love that. I love that so much, right? Because transitions is something we're going to go through our whole life.
All the time,
right? So how do people work with you then? How do they get in contact with you, reach out to you, all that kind of great stuff?
Email and text are the best way to get a hold of me. I think you guys have got my contact.
I do, but what's the website? Just so.
Mm-hmm. My website is eahamilton.com. Super hard to find. LinkedIn is also a great way to get in touch with me.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to make sure to link all of that information below. And also, I'm assuming that they could also just call you and kind of like strategize with you. Yeah,
absolutely. Great. Text.
Great.
Text especially is a great way to get me to get a hold of me just to set up the call.
Yeah.
And so I know again, for a lot of my C-suite clients, they don't want to pick up the phone. They just want to text.
Yeah. Yeah. It's better to communicate. Yeah. Right. Because also like, come on, I'm sure that you like me and everybody listening, you get about 1,000 calls that aren't even related to business. They're just random stuff, right? So sure. I love that. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I love that.
Hey, coach, can we set up a call?
Great. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I know what you want. Let's do it.
I love that. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today and
thank you, Nina.
And just having this. I know I kept you above time and I'm sorry about that. I just really enjoyed talking with you. So thank you for being here and thank you for pouring all of that knowledge. I'm going to make sure to link all your information. I just really like you. I like your energy. I like what you're about. I love what you're doing in the world to helping people transition. And I think it's super important and something that now that people are, and I just love that you brought that up, transitioning from maybe having to go back into the office after 3 or 4 years of being home. It's a tough move and they're going to need you, girl. They're gonna need you. So thank you so much for hanging out with me. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Nina. I really appreciate your time. And this was a wonderful conversation. Really.
Thank you. Same. Thank you. Guys, I love her, right? Don't you love her? I'm going to make sure to link all of her information below so that you can reach out to her, because honestly, I know that a lot of you are going through different transitions, whether or not you're transitioning into a whole new, maybe you're becoming entrepreneurs. Like we were saying, all the women are kind of like leaving the workforce. Maybe you're one of them. Maybe you're transitioning, you know, a marriage, or transitioning something at work or career or something. All of us have transitions in our life that sometimes are a little hard to get through, and especially by ourselves. Don't do this alone. The journey doesn't have to be done alone. This is why Bitsy is here. So I'm going to make sure that you can get in contact with her, because I know that you guys are really high achievers and go-getters and all that great stuff, but even they need some help from time to time. I love you guys so much. This is Nina Perez, Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Until next time.